To see how the Avos and the Shiftei Koach react to a situation of crisis. I mean, what exactly goes on? The dialogue. You always see in the Torah, you see many times situations of crisis, but you see on the surface what was done, that's it. You don't see a whole dialogue. Over here you actually see a discussion between Yaakov and the Achim as to what exactly to do. And when you take a look at the discussion, at first sight, it seems difficult to comprehend. I mean, what exactly is going on? It seems a bit irrational. First, the psukim starts over here. Mem beis choftes. That's where it starts from. Mem beis choftes. And it continues until... until Shishi, that's Mem Gimel Tesvav. Alright? Until Shishi. Okay. And there are many kashas over here. I mean, the kashas are so numerous, it's hard to know which ones to enumerate. But let me give a few. It would appear at first sight when you read through the psukim, it says like this. It says, Vayavoyel Yaakovim Atzakan Vegidlo Eskala Karsis and Lema. Told him what happened. And he goes through the Sipra Maisa, right? Goes through the Sipra Maisa. So then, what is Yaakov? What's Yaakov's reaction? V'yamalem Yaakov v'yam oisi shikaltem yeisef einenu v'shimon einenu v'spinyamin tikachu olay hayucholona. So sounds like just like an emotional outburst. Then Reuven says the shnei vonai Thomas umlay avienu elecha. Also, of course, you are familiar with Rashi. Was Rashi says shnei vonai Thomas umlay avienu elecha? So Rashi says in the next pasuk, Lamed Ches, Rashi says, "Le'er b'ni machan." Rabbi said, "It says Lo kibel dvar shul Reuven." Amar b'char sheita hoza. Who am I? Lamed banav. He says he's going to kill his children. V'chi banav him v'le banai. I mean, what kind of sense does that make? Doesn't make any sense. Sound like Reuven's just to understand Reuven's statement is difficult. Just an irrational statement. So Yaakov answered back. First answer was Le'er b'ni machan. He won't go. Okay. Fine, so he's not going to go. He made his decision. He's not going to go. All right, he won't go. He can't. That's it. He won't go. But then, v'arav kaved baretz. Right? Suddenly, I mean, the rav was very very heavy, very bad, very serious. Sounds like he changed his mind now. Just like before, he's not going to go. Now the hunger is bad, so there's no more food left, so now go. I mean, what kind of thing is this? I mean, he didn't know he was going to run out of food. Difficult to understand. We're talking about Yaakov Avinu over here. It says also Rashi makes mention of this point when he's in regard to Yehuda. Because it says, Kasha Kilu Lechol, so it says, Yehuda Amalehem, Hamtina Lezakin Achetich LaPasman Abayas. Wait for the old person, you know, till the food is gone from the house. Well, what do you mean? I mean, he can't see 2 feet ahead of him. Of course, the food's going to be gone. There's no question about it. No, he has to wait until the food's actually gone. Then he'll make a different decision. As soon as it's actually gone, it's not actually gone. I mean, if a person can't think 2 steps ahead and see that the food's going to be gone, very difficult to imagine that this should be one of the others.
Kind of like Mari Neyman.
Right. So then Yehuda came in, right? Then Yehuda came in. And so, right. So then he said, go, right? So then he said, go. This was the second decision, was to go. Second decision was to go down. But without Binyamin. That has to be understood also. What do you mean? How can he go without Binyamin? So then they said, no. They told him, Hoyd, Hayd, Bono, Ishle, Malasir, Fon, Bilta, Chicham, Mitcham. If you're going to send, okay, if not, no, we can't go. Then he starts questioning them. And what happened before? There's no questioning before. It sounds like a new story over here. He's telling them a new story. He just told them a long time before. I don't know how long it was. It doesn't say how long it was. But from the time they brought the food back till they ran out of food. So before he told them the story, now he started to question the supervisor. And then what happens? Then they answer him. Then they answer him. So when they answered him, so then he said, okay, now you can go. Right? Yehuda gave him a guarantee. He accepted Judah's guarantee. And then he said, when he told him the whole plan, how to do it. Right? Okay, so there's three times that Yaakov made three decisions. First one was he won't go. Second one was go without Binyamin. And the third one was to go with Binyamin. Sounds like, when you read through the Pesukim, it sounds like it's just, sounds like really the Yehuda had control. He says, wait, we'll wait till he gets hungry, there's no more food, and then we'll maneuver him this way, maneuver him that way, like they maneuvered him. Doesn't sound like he was in control. That's impossible. It can't be. What I'd like to show is simply that that every step here was rational. Every step in Yaakov's decision was rational. And essentially I'd like to show what the difference was between Reuven and between Reuven's statement and between Yehuda's statement. Also, it's interesting, at the end it says, when he told him to go, so then he said, V'ani kashya shacholti shacholti. Right? What does that mean, V'ani kashya shacholti shacholti? Means now he says, I'm gone already. Or Ramban says, kashya avadati avadati, it means. And then it's too late already. That's it. Whatever, I lost Yosef, and since I lost Yosef, that was after that blow, you can't do anything worse to me. But that seems like, again, it seems like an open contradiction to what it said before. Because it said, Yosef enenu v'shimon enenu les binyamin tikachu alai yucholana. So if he thinks kasher shacholti shacholti, so what is he so worried about binyamin? Sounds like a contradiction here. The whole sipur ha'maisa. Many questions here. Many questions. Anybody have any other questions? Kasher shacholti shacholti means that's it. I'm lost already. So if you lost already, so why are you so worried about saving binyamin? See, worried about saving binyamin. So then why do you say you lost? I mean, you still have Binyamin? Still Binyamin? Yeah. Okay, good question. Yeah. Says Yehuda said that he'll give up his Olam Haba. What kind of a thing is that? Yeah. What kind of thing is that? Yeah, and what good? I mean, it's worse. So here, Yehuda's going to lose Olam Haba. Now he has a son that lost Olam Haba. It's worse. It's worse than the death. It's a fate worse than death. Yes.
Yeah, you said the first case.
That's the second time. He said, go without him. And I said, we can't do that. And you see, there's three accounts of the incident, by the way. There's three accounts. One account is when it happens. The second account is over here. And the third account is one that is in Vayigash. In Vayigash. And Vayigash have the same order. He said, "Adani shows what we have. Vanali, yeah. Vatemal of the Chavidu loves me. Vanemal of the Loyuchal now Lazav is Aviv. Right? Vahikilino. Vahikilino loved the Chavi. Right? When we went up to our father. Vanagalo ace divrei Adani. Vayom Avinu shuvu shivru lanu matochav. Vanomar lo nuchal aredus. Mieshachina katan itanav yiradnik lo nuchal aros pnei yeshachina katan itanav. So first it says, Vanagalo ace divrei Adani. We tell them. And then he didn't say anything. Then Shuvah Shuvah Lona Bat Ochal. Then Lanuchal Aret. It's exactly the way it occurred over here. See, so first he said, I'm not going to. First, he said, in other words, when they wanted to go together, he said, no, he's not going to go with you. That was the end of that. Then he advised them to go separately. That was the second idea. And the third idea was to, of course, take Binyamin. Okay, any other points? Why was he worried about Binyamin? That's the question. Why was he worried about Binyamin? Okay. What about his concern for Shimon? That's a good question. That's a hard one to answer. Apparently, it's a question of Shimon and Binyamin. Shimon didn't have a chance. Shimon didn't have a chance against Binyamin. Okay. Shimon's definitely going to die there on the side. Okay. We'll see. It's not really that clear whether Shimon was definitely. We'll see. Yes. That's a good question. The question is, Shimon is definitely going to be killed, and Binyamin is a son. Binyamin is a son.
Maybe Yaakov figured if Shimon is the Levi after.
Good question. That's a good question. He definitely has no right to sacrifice the life of Shimon for a suffolk in Binyamin. It's a good question. He has no right to sacrifice the life of Shimon for a suffolk in Binyamin. Okay, yes. Let's start off like this. We'll start off with the question of the. In this account over here, there are two times when the brothers tell him what happened. Right? Two times. Why two times? They should have spoken it out the first time. Why two times? Let's start off with that. Okay? All right. Now, in the beginning it says like this. In the beginning it says like this. Dibar Ish, we'll take the first account. Dibar Ish Adonai Yaretz Tanu Kashay Svitam Sonic Ragamas Aretz. By the way, you see an interesting thing. It says, Ho Echod Einenu Vakotain Hayyim Esavina Baretz Kanon Vayyim Elayna Ish Adonai Yaretz Bezay Sedek Kichinam Atem Achichem Achad Nichu Iti Vesrav Matechem Kuhu Lechel Vahaviyu Es Achichem Akotain Elay Ve'edo Ki Loi Meraglam Atem Kichinam Atem Es Achichem Atein Lechem Vesaretz Eskaro. So really they told him already, they told Yaakov already that they mentioned about the other brother. Right? So why didn't Yaakov ask the question then? Later Yaakov asked the question. In the next account he asked the question. Why did you do me harm by telling the man that you have another brother? You know, there's no need to say anything when nobody asks you. What do you have to mention additional facts for? So any additional facts you're going to mention could be used against you. Why don't you keep quiet? So they answered him that it wasn't possible because he was interrogating us as spies. And when you're interrogated as a spy, so the best thing is to tell the truth, insofar as there's nothing wrong with the truth, because otherwise you have to keep a cheshbon of what you're saying and you're caught in the contradiction. There's danger of being self-contradictory. So therefore they said that we answer them everything insofar as our knowledge dictated. So he says, So he was interrogating us. He asked all kinds of questions.
That
the Rabban mentions already. It doesn't say that Yosef asked these questions. So the Rabban mentions, Rabban says that the Torah doesn't have to tell you all the details every time. That was left out. But the this one of Chutz says that doesn't make sense. That's the way it occurred. It makes sense because simply if this was an interrogation, it wasn't just those few questions that you saw in the pasuk. Interrogation means a thorough investigation. But the Torah doesn't bring down many times. The Torah doesn't bring down all the specific details. Very little event. Yeah, just the pertinent points. But in reality, he gave them a thorough cross-examination. So therefore, in a cross-examination, insofar as you have nothing to hide, you best thing is to tell the truth, because otherwise you're going to get caught. And he said, Could we have known that he's going to have this? If we would have known that, so then of course we'd have to start fabricating. So we have to start fabricating consistently. But insofar as there's no danger, so why should you? So they answered him rationally. They said that was the rationale of a procedure. He didn't have anything to say. He agreed that was a rational thing to do. But why didn't he ask the question before? Before they told him the same thing. Lama Beis. Vayachad einenu vakotein hayyim esavina baretz kanaan. So she said, Lama Reisimli. And what does he care also? Alright, that's a good question. Don's asking me, so what does he care? I told you there's thousands of questions. What does he care if they told him it's too late now? So they say, Lama Reisimli. Crying over spilled milk. Means finished already. That's it. Yes. Now there's only one clue here, really. Getting out of these problems is not so simple. Not simple. Takes a lot of work. But there's one clue that permits you to get out of it. Only one clue that permits you to understand this piece of Chumash. It's two words. Without those two words, you'd never understand. There's no way out of this. It sounds like Yaakov simply is just under one emotional fit at one time, and then he goes into another emotional fit. So it sounds like. There's two words here. See? When they tell him over what happened, in Mitzrayim with Yosef, is one thing that they added that didn't occur. What is it? One thing they added that didn't occur. What was it? Reuven says that they left out that the Miragli, just a Miragli Matem, but they didn't say Lira Sarah Sarah's Basem. You could argue they don't have to say exactly the same words. There is one thing over here. Maybe Vayitin Asana Kimiraglim Asarats. Kimiraglim Asarats is, yeah, it's not as strong as an accusation. Alright. Not as strong an accusation. Well, Lo Yinim Raglim. Okay. That's possible. It's possible. We'll soon see. It's like this. There's two words over there that they didn't occur. It says Vesa'oris Tescaro. Vesa'oris Tescaro. That Yosef never said. Huh? Yeshiva never told him that. That's like, you'll come back, you bring your brother, Vesaret Tzachara, and then you'll be able to do business in the land. No upshot, Rashi has difficulty with Vesaret Tzachara. What does it mean? I mean, so Rashi doesn't mean to go around the land, but it's so hard because Tzachara means to do business. Meant like to give them special rights, special consideration, because they're undergoing this investigation and they prove innocent, so therefore he has to somehow he has to make up to them. Ah. So, why did they add that factor? Why did they add that factor? That's the question.
Yosef wanted to come back for more food.
What?
Yosef wanted to come back for more food.
To do. There was a fact to do. One thing.
He said they had a different purpose.
Ramban noticed it, right? Ramban. Take a look at Ramban. What is the reason?
The purpose might be different.
No, it's very simple. What they did was they made light of the situation. That's what they did. They made the situation much less severe than it really was. Because they said, you see, Vayitin Asanakim Raglan Zaretz, then it says, you'll come back, you'll bring your Chichim Akatain, and he says, Veda, Kilim Raglan Kim Etem, Esachichim Etain Lachem, Vesaretz Tiskaro. Which means that this investigation is not serious. Not serious. So Yosef was in charge. He was the Shalat al-Aretz. Apparently Yosef, there was great danger in Egypt. Danger was that since Egypt is the only country that has food, so of course there was a danger somebody's going to try to come in. They're going to overthrow the government. That's why Yosef was placed directly in charge of giving out the provisions. Why? Because he was an overseer. He had to check out the people. Ramban says he didn't check them out individually, we checked them out in groups. Checked them out in groups. But there's a reason why he was, because he was the only one that Paro would trust to make sure that that nothing should happen which will cause the downfall of Egypt at that time. Because at that time Egypt was tremendous power. So therefore it stands to reason that in such a situation it's a matter of procedure almost. That you have to investigate. You have to investigate certain people. So anything, any slight difference, so it must be investigated. So they made the situation sound like it's almost the normal procedure. Mm-hmm. This is what happened. Went down there, the Chaim Yeh, there's a leader over there, he's in charge, and of course they're looking for suspicious people, and therefore we came down. For some reason they chose us. I mean, they took us as a possibility. So therefore he says, look, you just take care of this and then come back and we'll we have no charge against you. There's no reason, there is no charge. We have no real charge, no real evidence against you. Nothing serious here. This isn't an accusation. But we have to check it out. Mm-hmm. On the contrary, you come back, Vesaret Tzachara. Vesaret Tzachara means that we have nothing on you. Nothing on you.
Routine checkup.
Yes.
Routine checkup.
Now the other brother, I never saw anybody say Pshat in that. What the other brother would prove. But the other brother apparently was like this. The only way I can say it like this. That the thing is that when you check out a spy, so you start questioning. You ask for different factors. Then you take one of the factors and you start seeing if it's true, correct? Apparently his intention was to take the younger brother and to interrogate him separately and then interrogate the brother separately and see if everything exactly comes out exactly the same way. That was the purpose. And you see, when he came, he interrogated, he spoke to him separately. That was the whole conversation had. Binyamin had kinichmeru rachamav elochiv. The whole he had a private discussion with
him.
The Yeshmer's children.
Yeah.
We'll not do that. Yes, okay. Yeah, they're trying to make it into two things. They're trying to make it easier on Yaakov, but also there was another thing.
Why don't you give Binyamin down there?
They wanted to let Binyamin go. Because if it's a serious situation, then he's not going to let Binyamin go so quickly.
So I'm just saying, they did the rational thing.
As a matter of fact, you see how light they made of this out of the situation. Why? What's the proof? Now you have a proof that they made light of the situation. What's the proof? Proof is what? The proof is that they failed to tell him one important thing. What was the important thing? That Yosef had given them
an ultimatum.
That Yosef had given them an ultimatum. Because that was only the second conversation that they mentioned that there was an ultimatum. In the first conversation, he didn't mention a word. Because then he said, after Vayikha Shakil Lachal Salachem, Shavim Mitzrayim, and Sashem Shavim Mitzrayim, and Shiv Lachal. No. I built the Achichem Etchem. Im Yesh Chomeshalech Aschini Etona Ner Dovidish Bolachor. Imenu Chomeshalech Loinere. Ki Yisham Alem Loisirufon. I built the Achichem Etchem. What was new in the second account, in the second thing they told him? New information? An ultimatum. That's right. At first they didn't tell him there was an ultimatum. Why didn't they tell him there was an ultimatum at first? That's why he said go down. Otherwise it doesn't make sense. They told him before. They said to him, he wants the younger brother to come down. Yeah, he wants the younger brother. He wants. Very nice. Of course it'll be easier. If the younger brother comes down, he'll be cleared and he'll give you your privileges. But who says that you can't go down without him? You'll go back. You'll tell him that he couldn't come down. Younger brother couldn't make it. Now we'll work it out now. That was Yaakov's second plan. See? But then they told him, no, that's impossible. Because there's an ultimatum here. Why didn't they tell him there's an ultimatum to begin with? Why? Because then Yaakov would immediately see the seriousness of the situation. Then he wouldn't have a chance. Then he'd never let the young go.
Then Yaakov wondered why they didn't go.
Of course they didn't want to go down by themselves. Because they wanted to go down into the best. They thought maybe he'll change his mind. See? So they waited until there was no more food. Then there was no more food. Then it said, Shuvu Shuvu Wana Matachal. Then he told him, he said, no, these... Not only is he not going with you, but you're going down yourself. That's what he told them. Then they said that's impossible. It's an impossibility. He gave us an ultimatum. They didn't mention impossibility before. That's clear. You have to say that shot in the process. There's no two ways about it. Mm-hmm. So that's why Vesar Tishara really shows that they made a lot of the situation, but it's backed up by the fact that otherwise it's completely unintelligible, the whole sequence. So therefore you must say that what? That's clear. What they did was they told him the ultimatum later and they made light of the situation. Yes. Yeah. That's a good point. Right. Okay. So in other words, yes. It says, now Reuben says, now you can point out why you got the ultimatum. Since it's an ultimatum, he says, Lo Mahariyasimli. You see, but that's true, I understand that. But still the question is, there was a flaw immediately. The floor. Yeah, I mean, what do you have to do that for? What do you have to do? Even if it's not an ultimatum, why are you do these things? It's true, now it's worse, it's an ultimatum, but... it still is a mistake, because you still put yourself in a bad situation. Ultimatum or not, it's a bad situation. So the question isn't completely answered. Of course, it's lighter, but it's not completely answered. Yes. And as a matter of fact, it seems from the psukim, almost as if they would have pulled it off. It seems that way, I can't prove it. But if you take a look, if they said this Arth Tisharo, next pasuk. Vayihe merikim sakeyem, vine ish sror kaspo besako. Vayiru es sroros kaspeyem, hemo vaviyem vayiro. So this stands in open contrast to before. That's Arth Tisharo. In this very light situation. But then what happened? Vayihe merikim sakeyem. They're taking apart their bags, unloading the bags. Suddenly they were quiet. Everybody was involved in fear, stricken with fear. Why? What happened? What was the fear? It wasn't what?
They weren't afraid before. They realized
it was an unusual circumstance.
Why? Because then they saw this situation is a little more severe than we thought. See? Not only all of them. They knew themselves it was more severe, but even they didn't realize how bad it was until they saw that. And Yaakov, of course, recognized immediately. Why? Because what did it mean that the food, that the money was there? What did it mean? Didn't mean they were getting richer. What did it mean?
Did you notice at that point that it's serious stuff?
Who didn't?
The brothers.
Apparently the brothers didn't realize how serious. This was even more serious than they had anticipated. It says, Hema Vavim Vayiro. They all feared together. Why?
Before that
they didn't realize. Why? Because here, what was the implication? What was the implication of the money in the bags? What was the implication?
Wow.
The implication was that there's a plot here. They're being framed. Now this, even they didn't realize that. They came back, they thought, alright, they saw there was an ultimatum. They saw that, they saw what happened, that they were in jail for a few days. They didn't tell the father about that either. But they saw it was serious, but not to this degree. This is a different thing altogether. This means that they're actually planning. It's just that now they're just trying to... in other words, you're really convicted already before you even get started. But now we just have to put the evidence together. So they put the story...
Right. That Yaakov's going to let him go after
this. It says, mashma that Yaakov, if he didn't see that, it's mashma he would have let them go. Why do I say it's mashma that way? Because he didn't answer them right away. They told him this or after sorrow, right? He didn't say no. It says they started to take apart, to unload the bags, right? So there must have been a gap of time. You see? There must have been a gap of time. He didn't answer them immediately. But there was no answer. And then they were unloading the bags. And then he says, Vayem aliyam Yaakov aviyam oisi shikaltem. Yei sefenenu v'shimon yenenu v'sbinyamin tikachu olai hoyu chulonah. You see? So apparently it would seem that their plan wasn't too far-fetched. If it wasn't for one incident. Can't say for sure, because maybe we wouldn't have said it anyways. But you see, there was no answer at first. Only later, when he saw that there's an implication of seriousness here, then what happened was that he right away put his foot down and said that he's not going to go. Yes. Well, yeah, the reason why he took it against himself was because Yaakov Avinu's taina was always to the Achim that the chait was not simply a chait against Yosef. It wasn't simply a chait against Yosef, but it was a chait against Yaakov. In other words, when they were Dan Yosef, they were being Dan Yaakov too, but they didn't consider that point. That's why I said Isi Shikaltem. See, all right, you have your arguments. You have your arguments among each other. You hold these wrong. It's chayav misa, not chayav misa, whatever you're passing over there. But over here, in the dini nefashis, you're not including me. You're leaving me out of the mishpat. And you see, when Yehuda went back to Yosef, and that was the whole tshuva. When Yehuda went back to Yosef, v'yigashel of Yehuda. So what was the essence of Yehuda's taina? And v'yigash, what was the essence, the substance of his taina? The taina, really, when you look at the taina, it's hard to understand. I mean, one guy's a crook, and another guy comes up and says, "I'll stay in place instead of him." And what kind of sense does that make? I mean, who's guilty? The one that's the crook. And he says, Cholila. What are you telling the one that ran after him? Who? What?
Menashe,
right. What are you telling me? He said like this. He says, yeah, Cholili ma'asei zeis. Hoyesh shanim tzagavi b'yadei hu yeli aved. V'atem al l'shon l'avichem. He says, Menashe was just. Why? Because the one is guilty. He's the one that has to pay the penalty. What kind of a taina was Yehuda's taina? Yehuda's taina is not taina staying altogether. What was Yehuda's taina? That what? Two things. Yaakov and himself. That was the whole thing. The whole plea. We go through the whole thing. Straight through. All the things was he was bringing out two things. There's two aspects of justice you have to deal with. One aspect of justice is with the criminal. That's true. But over here, what about me personally? When you asked me these things, we didn't do anything. You asked me these things, and therefore you put me in a certain situation, right? So now where is he justice to me? Where is he justice to my father? The whole plea was that your concept of justice is only including the one guy, but you're not including the other factors. And basically, that was the tshuva, because the tshuva was that after that, that's when it says that Yosef told him it was. Why? Because then he saw that not only in regard to Binyamin, because Binyamin really was a copy of Yosef. Binyamin was a photostatic copy of Yosef. But not only did they have tremendous avon in regard to Binyamin, they overcame the sinah, but also they recognized the mishpat as far as the father's concerned. That was as far as Yaakov was concerned. Okay. Now let's take a look over here. I mean, in a real bezin, of course, a bezin can't deal with things like this. But in everyday life, a person has to. Yes. And it says, "Eisi shikaltem Yosef and then Shimon has been yom tikach alayich." What is he saying? What is he saying? It's funny. I mean, it's an open contradiction between this pasuk and "Vani kasher shacholti shacholti," because now he's saying "Eisi shikaltem," right? Yosef and then Shimon and kasher shacholti shacholti. He doesn't even mention Shimon. That's all. What happened to Shimon? No. So now he's telling you you're destroying me. Oh. What's the pshat? Let's understand. Excuse me?
Rashi does mention Shimon.
I'm sorry. Rashi does mention Shimon. There must be another one I saw does mention. Okay. All right. So here it says, Oisi Shikalta. What's the pshat? I remember so wrong. It could be from the Medrash. Okay. So what's the pshat? What's the pshat, Oisi Shikalta?
You were
before. Oisi Shikalta, Yosef Feinenu Vishiman Enenu Ves Binyamin Tikachu. So it means like this. It means now you want to take Binyamin, right? Now that means that you, in other words, you started your devastation and now you want to conclude it. I'm not going to let you do that. And Rani Kesha Shechalti, Shechalti means that you're ready, I'm already finished off altogether. Right? It's two different things. One case, the person is saying, look, there's still something to save. That's the first case. And I'm not going to let you take everything. Or I'm not going to let you destroy me totally. And the second case says, I'm totally destroyed already. Right? Two different statements. Two different implications. Two different meanings. Okay. But let's understand what happened after that. Then you see, then Reuven says, in essence, and also, why did he tell them, was it just a criticism? Was this just a criticism? What was in the statement? In this statement, in Oisi Shikaltem, was really the statement, Le'ere B'ni Imachem. I don't think it takes much insight to see that. Right? Because Oisi Shikaltem, and then he says, Le'ere B'ni Imachem. In spite of Reuven. Because Reuven's statement, you can simply nullify. That's it. But the decision was based upon Oisi Shikaltem. What's the pshat? Why? What does Oisi Shikaltem mean? What does it mean? What do you say? Yashi. Okay. So what's the pshat? You see? Malame shechoshdan. So what does it mean? He suspected that they sold him, or that they killed him like Yasef. Alright, what's the pshat? The pshat is like this, you see? It doesn't mean really, if he really knew that they killed him or they sold him, I mean, he would have said something. It doesn't say that. It says, he really thought he was dead, first of all. He didn't know, he didn't even think the possibility of selling. Right? But the point is, as I mentioned once before, when it says, Chazal say, that why did Yaakov suffer for 22 years? Because that the power of Shikha was given only for a real mace. Only for a real mace, Chazal say. But the power of Shikha was never given for forgetting. Shikha means to forget. The power of forgetting was only given for a real mace, when a person really dies. But the power of forgetting was never given if a person's still alive. If a person still is alive, that's what Rashi says. Rashi is on Pasuk Lamed Hey, Lamed Zion. Says, Ein adam mekabel tanchum al alachai v'sover shemeis. Shal ameis nigzerog zera shiishtakach min alev. Ala v'loy alachai.
In the Vayesha?
In the Vayesha, right. So what's the reason? The reason is because insofar as there's a possibility that he's still alive, or there's something that he's still alive, you see, so the person can't remove himself from he can't remove his psychic energy from the object. In Avelis, the person removes the psychic energy from the object. That's only if he knows, if he's sure that it happened. See, but if he's not convinced, so then the energy is always there because the attachment's too powerful. He can't break the attachment. So that it's easier in the beginning, but it keeps on going forever because he can never remove it.
As long as possibility exists.
Oh. So you see that he had doubts. Now, one of the doubts apparently was that the brothers themselves were responsible. Why did he have a doubt the brothers themselves were responsible? They did something to him. Doesn't mean exactly he knew exactly. He didn't know. But he had a lot of doubts. Why do you have doubts? Why do you have doubts about the brothers selling him? Why? Because he knew the nature of the brothers. See? He knew the midas of the brothers. He knew what was going on. He saw what was going on. How do you know that he saw what was going on? How do you know? By the Chalemis, right. What does it say? But he didn't know that. It doesn't say he knew that. That's right. He kept quiet. He shut him up. He says, "Havoy navoy ani v'imcha v'achecha l'shtach v'slecha arzo." Ma'achalam asher shalomta. Right. Vayekano vayechav v'aviv shamar sadava. So he knew. But the point was that he knew. But he knew politically that Yosef is doing a stupid thing. So that's why I told him to keep quiet. Shut up. But why did he know politically? You see, really, Yosef was really the greatest. Excuse me.
Neither reaction.
Really, Yosef was the greatest of the brothers. There's no question about it, because the Chazal say that Yaakov taught him all the Torah to learn in Shem Vever, which means that even Sisrei Torah taught him. The other brothers apparently weren't ready for that. So really, the true leader, even though he was only 17, but the true leader was Yosef. But the brothers couldn't take it. And Yaakov saw that there's animosity here, there's hatred. So therefore Yaakov warned Jason to keep quiet, to watch himself. Ah. But Yaakov knew the factors. That's why he said Eisi Shikaltam. But what's the pshat Eisi Shikaltam? Eisi Shikaltam means like this. You see, when Yaakov saw the situation, he says, the Sfona mentions, he mentions like this. Olai hayu chulona. Ein echad me'elu ha'nikrim bo'im mi'bneichem, aval kulom bi'bonai. You see? Zeh mi'bli safik einai ki im misibas merivai seichem, zeh mzeh. Va'atem ha'meshaklim, I see. That's what the Sfona says. That's the pshat, that's the pshat. Pshat is that when you see something occur, when a person sees something occur, the logical thing for a person to do is to look for a cause. You see, the moment the brothers saw that this happened to them, immediately they looked for a cause. Because what did they say? What was the first thing they said? First thing they said was, immediately, as soon as they suspected them. They said, Avol Hashem manachno alachino, sharein etzaras nafshe, b'schanei alein avol Hashem manol, kem bar alein etzaras zeis. Right away, that's the cause, came back as Ellie. And Shiftekah, every step, was lived according to Ashgacha. So either you did a stupid thing yourself, or else it was Ashgacha, right? They knew that that's the reason. Yaakov, of course, couldn't know, because Yaakov didn't know what went on, didn't know what happened, he had suspicions. He had Chachma, but he couldn't know for sure. Yes. So therefore, you see, so Yaakov also was looking. Why did Yaakov say, Yelayere b'ni machem? Because Yaakov sized up the situation. This was his first evaluation of the situation. That has to be a reason why. Now he says, suddenly, first of all, Yosef is lost. Oh, I mean, Yosef is lost, one. Two, all of a sudden you go down to get food and something serious occurs. That's why, see, until he saw, hey, Marikim Sakeim, there was no indication it was serious. But once he saw something serious, there being a chance that something funny is going on here. So therefore, if it's a serious situation, then there must be a reason, right? Now we know for sure that there is a deficiency in your character, right? That the midos over here are imperfected. Because we see this tremendous animosity and fighting rivalry between the achim, right? Ah, so therefore, the conclusion that Yaakov made was one thing, that this is simply a case of cause and effect. It's cause and effect, namely that the reason why these things occurred is because of your carelessness. Because of your, which is based upon your emotional conflicts, your rivalry. See the sin up. Ah. Now, that was the first. That was his first decision. That was his first decision. That was Yaakov's first decision. Yes.
You didn't have to say that.
But in other words, Yaakov was defining them. He was saying, "Look who we're dealing with." In other words, we're dealing. Once you see, for instance, you see a person is a careless individual. You know the guy doesn't know what he's doing, and suddenly you find out that he's a pauper. Right? So what are you going to say? That maybe lightning struck his house and burnt up his bonds? Or you say that that probably the guy's a careless fool, he doesn't know what he's doing, he squandered his money, if he had money. You know what I mean? So that's a rational thing is to always associate it to the general cause. See? Let me give you something. The Rambam explains in the Modern Bochum, he says like this. He says, on evils that befall man, there are three classes. Three classes of evils that befall man. First class is from God. That's the first class. He says, this is in the smallest minority. Smallest minority. Most, very, very few things are because of that. Second class, he says, are the evils that people do to each other. He says, that is far greater than the first class. And he says, in the third class, is the evils that a person does to himself. That is the greatest one of all. That's what he says. Quantitatively. So therefore what Yaakov was saying was simply the same thing, that over here you have a situation where evils befell somebody, right? Now what is the reason? What's the cause? So obviously the most rational deduction is, if you see that people are imperfect, you see they themselves have problems that they can't handle emotionally, they're imperfect, they can't handle their emotions, right? Their meters are corrupted, and something bad happens. What is the rational decision that a person must make when he takes an overview of the situation? One rational decision, namely what? That is a case of cause and effect, right? In the particular, in the material world, in the physical world, it's a different type of thing than in the theoretical world. Why? Because in the physical world, it's difficult to know precisely every single detail. So you have to use generalizations in your approach. You see, but you must stick to the approach of generalizations, because in other words, a generalization means a principle which, on the whole, will work out, will hold true. And since on the whole it will work, So therefore, a person must abide, must live according to that principle. Maybe in this situation it's not that principle. Maybe it wasn't their fault. Maybe this really was an accidental occurrence. Something happened, as it really did. But the point is, it really didn't, it really didn't. It really didn't as far as they were concerned, but it really didn't, because it really was tied up with Yosef. See, actually he was right, but in a different way. Because Yosef and Enu, the Shimon and Enu were really tied up together. Why was Yosef and Enu? That's the same reason why Yosef and Enu was Shimon, because Yosef was the one that took Shimon, of course. You understand what I mean? So Yaakov was right. It really was causally related. Yaakov was right, but in a different way than he saw. You see? To them it was a different type of causality, actually. To them it was Ashgacha. Because of the chait. You see? But to Yaakov saw immediately that it was tied in. He saw the principle, but how did he maneuver? How did he operate in the situation? One general rule. The general rule is that if you're dealing with a situation where an evil befalls somebody, there must be a cause. Now, there's only three possibilities. Now, let's take a look at which is the most prevalent, and let's take a look if the most prevalent really is a basis here for the most prevalent. So he says, now the most prevalent evil is the ones you do yourself, right? Oh, so therefore this is probably the reason, right? Although you have to have a basis. What's the basis? The imperfection of the brothers. Imperfection of the brothers. We must come to one conclusion. That these things, they didn't just single you out as spies, but there's something here, there's something behind this. It's due to your imperfections that it was caused. Yaakov was the shrewdest individual that in the Torah, insofar as human relations were concerned, the shrewdest. That's the Yaakov. His whole name, Lavan, Esau, very. He had a very good training ground. Lavan, all that. Marashi means it like this. You see? Let me just give one more point. This point Leslie Unger mentioned. He's right. When we clear up this next point, you'll see, we'll come back to this point and see exactly how it works. What happened was, when he said like this, what was his decision? His decision was, the other question we asked, what was his decision? His decision was, he's not going to go, right? So what did they say? They wait until there's no food. The pshat was like this. You see, Yaakov was in a position where he had to make a rational decision. Now, he had to make a rational decision based upon the factors that he sees. Now, what are the factors that he actually sees? He sees evil befalling certain people, right? And he knows there must be a cause, right? And he sees that the causative agent exists in them, correct? So there is, therefore, in a general way, the rational conclusion is that it's cause and effect. And generally speaking, that's the way it is. So you have to always act within general principles, correct? So, therefore, he said, Le'er ben Imachan. Now, why did he change later? Later he changed. Later he started to talk to them. What happened? Then he told, gave him advice, how to handle it. Sounded like he changed. The answer is like this. There was one factor. What was the difference?
He saw a different cause of action.
No. There's one factor. The factor was there was another way out. See? There was another way out. The other way out was reality itself. See, reality itself was a way out. Why? Because out of the situation. Because he didn't know there was an ultimatum, right? So therefore, so far as he knew, there was no danger of death to Shimon. An ultimatum is danger of death. There's an ultimatum. He just said, hold him there. He didn't say he's going to kill him. So therefore, so far as he's concerned, there is another way out. What do you have to go back to Mitzrayim for food, right? But maybe the situation will change. Maybe the food situation will change. That's why the second dialogue is after the food situation changed already. V'horaya, there's one pasuk that tells you that this is so. Which is the pasuk? Exactly. V'horav kavei baratz. What did I say v'horav kavei baratz for? We know there's a rav. The whole story is about the rav. Well, I say, you should say simply, right? By he kasha kilu lechalas Hashem's ruin, turn around with him, shu shu lamal dechal. No, for a rav, kove baratz. Because he was hoping that there's a chance that what? That the rav would stop. But what's the pshat? I don't mean he was simply hoping that. The point was, he acted in the most rational way under the first situation. The first situation was one in which there's a way out. Reality could save you. It's a small chance and things are going to change. It looks pretty bad. But there still is a chance, and here you're dealing with individuals. You're dealing with individuals that you see the inherent corruption, correct? And you see the what? And you see the situation. So he didn't even go in any further. He didn't delve any further into the situation. There was no need to delve. Why? Because based upon the overview, we come to one conclusion. That it is their fault, and therefore dealing with them is ridiculous. As long as there's a chance for reality to intervene, there's no need to go any further in the investigation. That's why he didn't ask the question. Which question? Because he wasn't even discussing the particular. You see, at first, the first decision that Yaakov made was on general grounds. Now, on general grounds, you see, you look at the situation, and a person must judge, and the physical can't know every detail, but on the whole, a person must approach it in a general way. So what was the general way? You see an evil which befalls somebody, and you see corrupt people. So obviously, there's an interrelation between the two. Maybe not, but there's no reason now to go any further. Rationality doesn't dictate to go any further in the situation. Reality might step in. Insofar as we're concerned right now, we don't have to go any further. You understand what I mean? So now, on the contrary, see, rationality dictates, rationality doesn't dictate that a person must investigate every point at every time. That's crazy. Rationality dictates that you must act under certain situations in a certain way, right? Now, if you see a situation where a guy is a criminal, see, a guy's a criminal in nature, you see a guy's in jail, right? So it could be that there's a possibility that he's in jail for another reason, that he didn't do anything, right? But rationality dictates that there's no reason to go any further. I mean, it's absurd. You see? At that point, I say like this, there were two decisions that Yaakov made. One, the first decision was in a general way. The second one was actually going into the situation. You understand what I mean? But what forced him to go into the situation? Reality forced him into the situation. Before reality stepped in, he didn't have to go into the particular situation. There's no need to. Here's a bunch of gangsters here getting in trouble. So that's it.
There's no food left.
Now it's a matter of life and death. Now you have to start investigating. Just a second. Maybe it's true on general grounds. I would make a decision the other way, right? But now I have no choice. I have to see. Maybe the situation in particular is different. So he said, okay, let's go through. Let's see what really happened in specific. Do you understand what I mean? And based on two different things. The first one was based on general grounds. And so far as he saw it, and so far as he sees, does he see the particulars? He doesn't even know if it's true or not. He doesn't even know if what the Achim are telling him are true. He doesn't know that. What base is there to go by? He sees simply, all he sees for sure is corrupt people and an evil, right? That he knows for sure. And he knows that there's a chance that they might get out of it, this reality might move in, right? So rationality dictates, stop there. That's all. Once reality moves and there's no chance, then we have to start investigating. Maybe it really is not this conclusion, right? Maybe the case is different. You understand? In other words, like this. Definitely.
Okay.
Still, a guy is a crook and he's in jail, right? Maybe he didn't do anything wrong. It's a possibility. But isn't it absurd to investigate that possibility? It's only if a guy has no choice. If it's his brother, he wants to save his life, so then he has to go investigate. But if it's not, so then what does he have to investigate for? You understand what I mean? So rationality dictates that he can't even, in other words, rationality dictates that there's no need to go into particulars. There's no investigation of particulars here to begin with. Liability doesn't even have to accept the possibility that the brothers are telling him this is a true story altogether. We'll have to accept that part. He doesn't know it. Right? You understand what I mean? There's no reason to accept it. That's why you see Yehuda knew this. That's why Yehuda said, Hamtinu lezokin at shetichla pasman abayas. Because Yehuda saw right away, he said, no, he's not going to give any decision now on this. Right now, the way the reality is now, you'll never be able to talk to him about the situation. Because to discuss the particulars is absurd. It's still the reality. It's still going to save you, right? So just the chance that maybe what we're telling him is true? Yeah, but there's a greater chance we're telling him is a lie. Because he sees that there's a causative agent here and he sees a result. So he's not even going to discuss it. You follow? That's what Yehuda said. Yehuda saw that. It wasn't an emotional thing at all. On the contrary, Yaakov's first decision was very rational. The whole reason the Torah writes is that we should learn from this how to act in real life. That's the whole purpose, to show you the whole discussion over here. The first decision was the rational one. If you have a story, a guy tells you a story and you see cause and effect the other way, it's absurd. Of course, he might be right, but it's absurd to go into it. Why should you accept it? If there's any chance that reality could save you, I would certainly say you're safer relying on the small bit of reality than to assume that that this case is a case which is against the laws of nature, against the universals. Possible, but the possibility is slim. That's ACP Kaltan. That was the first decision. You understand? Okay. However, there was a second thing. There was a second reality. That's in the first reality. In other words, the rule that you derive from the first thing, from the first decision of Yaakov, is namely that whenever the universals in the situation would lead you to a certain conclusion, and there is any possibility that you do not have to go against those universals, if reality leaves you any opening not to deny the universals, you should definitely go by that reality. Because denial of universals is a dangerous thing. True, it's a possibility, but it's ridiculous. Any person who's rational would never do it. Okay? You see a man as a criminal nature, and he sees the trouble, don't assume that he was framed. It's ridiculous. Okay? Unless unless you have no choice, then you have to really start investigating. But if you know, as long as you're not forced into a decision, as long as you're not forced into a decision to decide whether this is a case which is in line with the universal principles or it's a case which is an exception to the universal principles, as long as you're not forced, don't make a decision in the matter. Withdraw. Hold out. Reality might step in. You might not have to make a decision. To make a decision in such a case is irrational. That was the first decision of Yaakov. His first decision was not to make any decision. And that's why he didn't discuss it, he didn't question him. Why didn't he question him? Because he wasn't even interested in what they had to say. He wasn't interested. His decision was based upon this. Reality is still a possibility, right? And these guys, what they're saying, they're claiming they're going against the universal principles of nature, right? Oh, it's a possibility, but why should I even move in and make a decision based on that? It's ridiculous. You see? That's why he withdrew completely. And he didn't question him, Lo mahar yesem li lagid l'ish, sheyesh lachem ach. Because that's already assuming that's going into the details. He wasn't ready to go into the details. You understand what I mean? You see it clearly. That's the first principle. That's the first principle of Yakutishas. Yes. What happened? I read an article where they said that the weather patterns changed. You understand? The weather patterns changed. That the East has, since 1970, from 1970 to 1974, the East has become very warm in the wintertime on the whole, and the South is getting very cold. So the bills in the South are going up for the heating, and the bills in the East are going down. Now, a person who would want to make an investment in Loco 10 years ago, what do you think of such a possibility? I mean, it's absurd. What do you mean? The weather's going to change. But it did. It's hard to say what reality is going to happen to save your life. The guy has no food now. Who knows what's going to happen? Maybe Egypt's going to make a new deal with Canaan. They're making a deal with Canaan. They're giving a certain amount of shipments. Anything can happen. The point is, insofar as reality is concerned, as long as the idea is like this, as long as you don't have to make a decision, you're not forced, coerced, you have no choice. You see, you're not in a situation, you have no choice. Then what should you do? Refrain. Refrain, because you're dealing with universal, you're dealing against the universal principle. You understand what I mean? Mm-hmm. To make a decision against the universal principle is a very dangerous thing. A person has to live his life in line with the universals. And the only time is if he has no choice, then there's nothing to do, and he has to. But as long as there's a possibility to refrain, that's what he should do. And that's exactly what Yaakov did. You see? He's saying, Shimon. So Shimon was no ultimatum, so it's a suffix. So Shimon is a suffix, but Yom is a suffix. So what did a wise person do? Don't do anything. Yes. Don't move. Yeah. They didn't mention anything about that Yosef is going to kill Shimon. They didn't mention that. They mentioned that he held them until they come back. But if they didn't come back, this is going to accuse him of killing them. On the contrary. On the contrary, because you see that he was Esau Lekimani Yerei. They mentioned that he's Mepharshim say, Midrashim say. They mentioned, they said to the father, they said that he's a person who is afraid of God. Because see, he treated us in the way that they let us out, and afterwards they told him over the whole story. So apparently told him over that he's a person that's a Yerei Lekim. So there's a good chance that he wouldn't kill Shimon.
And you have no proof of the Holy Shimon anymore. They're not coming back. The whole
program. The universal principle in this case tells you that there's something that is wrong. Therefore, you have to live by, your person has to live by the universals. That's the thing. Person has to live by universals. What's the universal? Universal is that these guys are guilty. That's why we'll refrain from any action. See? Wait for reality. Reality can save it completely. Okay? See, from the answer, you didn't accept the account. They didn't even talk about Yosef and Shimon. Yosef should call them. Yosef and Shimon and Shimon. What does that mean? That means, what are you telling me this time? I'm not interested in details. The main thing is that Yosef is gone, Shimon's gone, and you people are a Shayim, and now you want to take Binyamin. That's the thing.
You lose Binyamin also.
So, I don't know what kind of details. Nothing going into detail over here. Why does he want to go into details? Because that's the rationality that dictates that this cause and effect over here. Right? And to go against that rationality is absurd when reality can step in. Insofar as learning is concerned also, I've noticed like this, like a lot of guys want to stay in learning. A guy wants to stay in learning, that's of course that's life. But the point is, who does stay in learning is one guy. The guy that waits for the last moment of reality to move out. That's the guy. See? In other words, when a person is in learning, so there's difficulty, a lot of difficulties, financial difficulties, this and that. So many people say, well, look, I can't do it. But the one, many times a person moves out before he really had to. It could be, if he wouldn't have moved out 5 years before, he would have stuck it out, he would have been there, then he would have been in a situation where he never would have been able to, he would never have to remove himself from learning. You understand? See? The one who makes it is the one that, that's the same principle. To wait for the last moment of reality. Wait for that last moment of reality. Yeah. I'm not saying not to plan ahead. A person should plan ahead. But planning ahead can be done in two ways. See? The planning ahead can be done 5 years in advance, or the planning ahead can be done in a way that it's at the last moment. Of course he has to plan. He has to plan. He has to make a move. But the point is the plan shouldn't go into effect until that last moment. See? Maybe something will happen tomorrow. Maybe the next day. Maybe next year. Why should I start now? Why should I start medical school now? I'll wait another year. Maybe something will happen. You understand? It'll be a new situation. I won't have to. I won't have to go into business. I won't have to go take a job. See? The last moment. There's two ways to plan. The correct way to plan is that last moment. You see? But when I say the last moment, I mean not the last moment it's too late. The last moment when he can act. So that's your question. Your question I'm saying you shouldn't plan. No. Plan, but when? The last moment. The last moment when the so therefore, on the second account, when they told him over what happened, then he went into the details. When they told him over the ultimatum, then he started, he was forced, he had to go into the details. So he said, just a second, now let's see really in this case, if it's really cause and effect in this case, then it's hopeless, we can't do anything. In other words, if these guys are really Rishayim, or they're one or two things, either they did it viciously, or else they... two possibilities over there why they got in trouble. One possibility is their emotions, and the other possibility is irrationality, because a person can make a mistake from two parts of his being. There's two parts of a person's being, his emotions and his intellect, right? Mistake can come from a defect in either one of these two parts, correct? So therefore, when he analyzed the situation, he said, Lom Harayesimli. He said, okay, let's not talk about the emotional. I mean, he can't tell them that they're Rishayim. I mean, they maintain they're not Rishayim. So that's not discussable. But the only point to discuss is whether rationally, maybe they got involved in this because of irrational stupidity. Maybe they made a mistake. So that's why I said, Lama Harayesimli. Why do you have to do that? Why do you have to tell them? So he found a rational flaw in their in what they were doing. If they're irrational in their actions, then you understand you can't send Binyamin. It's crazy. Because that's a certain death. So you have to sit and wait here. Whatever happens, happens. Correct? There's no benefit. If they are irrational in the way they act. You see? If they're irrational. If they're going to go back to, they're going in for interrogation, and they're doing stupid things. So you're going to send Binyamin? It's crazy. It's impossible. Then you have no choice. Then there's in other words, you can't, even in a situation where you have to act on a small possibility, it only makes sense to act if there's a possibility, if the action is an action. But if you're dealing with an irrational individual, totally rational, so what's there to do? Oh. So therefore, so they answered him. They said it wasn't just a criticism on the past. But he was saying to them, look, you're acting crazy. You're acting crazy, right? There's no sense doing anything then. You're going to lose over there, and you lose over here, so you might as well wait here. See? So therefore, they answered him, no. That wasn't irrational. They're showing precisely the rationale of how they acted. And he accepted it. Then he didn't send, he still didn't send them. Why didn't he send them yet? It wasn't something he could discuss with them. But there was still the other problem. What was the other problem?
Their
own personality. The emotional corruption, the ethical imperfection. Okay? Oh. So, therefore, there you had Yehuda's answer. Now we have to just compare Yehuda's answer in contradistinction to Reuven's. Okay. What was the difference between Reuven and between Yehuda? The difference? Let's take what we were in. I know we're not taking it in order because we're going the way we, you know what I mean? So to either order you're taking, it'll be breaking some order. So that's Reuben. Reuben says, you killed my two sons. What did you say? What's the difference? Huh? By the way, before I mention, I just want to go back one point. You see that it was the pressure of reality. How do you see it was the pressure of reality that forced Yaakov? And you see it in Yehuda's words. Why? Because it's Shilcho Anariti v'Nakumo v'Neilecho v'Nichye v'Lo Nomos Gam Anachdu Gam Ato Gam Tapeno. You see? That's in the Pasuk Ches. Yeah. That was the last moment. V'Nichye v'Lo Nomos Gam Anachdu Gam. He couldn't have said that before. Reuven couldn't have said that. Why? Because in Reuven's time he couldn't say Nechdiyo Lainamas, there's food. The reality's still here. Wait. But over here, he said, this is the last moment already. See, that's what Yehuda said. But Yehuda realized. That's why I said, I'm Tino Lazakin. That was the whole plan. I'm Tino Lazakin. He knew that that Yaakov was basing his decision upon that bit of reality, that chance in reality. He wouldn't look at the situation. So now, so then he gave him his guarantee. But the only thing was, you that recognized, true. Rationale, they are. Right? The situation is urgent. There's no choice. But there still remains one question. If they're imperfect in mitos, in character imperfection, so then again, then there's no action. You can't do an action if a person doesn't have intelligence or if his emotions are on the right? Oh, so that was you that stepped in. Anochi avenim yodi tfakshenu. What's the pshat? What's the difference between this one and Reuven's statement? What's the difference between this one and Reuven's statement? Reuven also gave a guarantee, but there's a difference. What's the difference? You have to understand like this. When Reuven said a shnei vonai tomis, you don't really think he meant it literally. I don't think anybody believes that. When Rashi says, so if he didn't mean it literally, so why does Rashi say that it's Bechor Shaita Huzeh? Why does Rashi say that Bechor Shaita Huzeh? He's a fool. I mean, he didn't mean it literally. So why does Rashi say he's a fool? Doesn't he know they're my kids, they're his kids? His kids are also my kids. What's the chat? Yes? The answer is, when a person makes a statement that's senseless, that doesn't make any sense, you see, it shows something. What does it show? A person makes a statement that's senseless, it shows something. It shows that a statement has to make some type of sense. It can't, if it doesn't make rational sense, then it must make emotional sense. You understand what I mean? When he said Ishnei Vonai Thomas, that's an emotionally it makes sense. I'm willing to go so far that I'll kill my two kids. But of course, in reality, it doesn't mean he's going to do it. Since it's absurd. But the point is, it shows that it's operating. In other words, a statement that doesn't make sense in reality still gives you a clue as to how it's operating in the person's emotions. There's an association. A person can't just make statements without disclosing anything. The moment a person makes a statement, if it comes from an individual, there's some disclosure. If it has no basis in reality, so then it's not a disclosure of his intellect, but it's a disclosure of the part of him that's not rational. You see? Now, what does this disclose from the part of him that's not rational? It discloses, first of all, one thing. That what? That it was an emotional reaction. It was an emotional reaction. An emotional reaction. Okay? In other words, like this. There's two ways that a person can react to a situation. Let's say, for instance, I have to give an example. Let's say, for instance, I'll give an example that everybody can identify with. Let's say a person is, when you're young, you drive a car, so you usually aren't too careful. You first learn how to drive, you have a desire to step on the gas. I assume it's universal. Okay? Carelessness. Ah. But then what happens is like this. I can tell by how great the smile is. Yeah. So what happens is sometimes that because the person is foolish and he's traveling on a one-way street in the wrong direction, 60 miles an hour in a 25 mile an hour speed zone, backwards, what can happen is that he can get into a very, very, if he's fortunate, a very close, serious argument. That he'd be very afraid if it was discovered. Now, if a person finds himself in such a situation, he says, I'll never do anything crazy like this again. You see? Now, you find a lot of times people do that. Not only in this situation, but in many other. I can't think of offhand. I'm just giving you one example. I'm sure that practically everybody here has gotten to that point. You know, where you saw it, I'll never do that again. What's the shot? The shot is the person really knew rationally that this was a crazy thing to do. Right? But what happened was that the reality didn't hit him yet. See? But then the moment he saw a reality hit him, and then the emotion of fear took over. He says, now I have to be rational. That's an emotional reaction to his irrationality. But I'll ask you a question. Is that person really rational? Yeah. Just that fear. Exactly. He will be rational as long, exactly in proportion to the duration of that fear. As soon as the fear wears off, that's it. Back to the old irrationality. There really hasn't been any change in the individual, you see? That was revenge. Eshnei vanai tomus in way of the enoi lecha. Emotional reaction. I'll do anything. I'll kill my kids. Even the statement itself shows an irrationality. The very statement is completely irrational. That's what Rashi points out. That if you make an irrational statement, okay, but it's an irrational statement with an inherent contradiction, shows you how far off he is away from rationality. So then he's just reacting emotionally to the fear of facing Yaakov. But that's not a guarantee, because for Yaakov there's only one guarantee. When a person sees the reality and he knows that he's gonna, and the person's completely in line, not an individual who's operating on the one side of an emotion, that's a dangerous individual. Dangerous. Why is he dangerous? First of all, as long as he's under the influence of the emotion, that's the one who's going to last. Another emotion comes along, it's going to be changed. The truth of the matter is, when Reuven originally wanted to save Yosef, right? Originally Reuven wanted to save Yosef. Why wasn't he successful? Why? You see, the same two people that spoke up before spoke up over here. Apparently they were the leaders, Reuven and Yehuda. Reuven and Yehuda before, Reuven and Yehuda over here. So why wasn't he successful? Because he was only afraid of one thing. He was afraid of the emotion of facing his father. So they yell at Einenu, Mani Ono Nivor. I'm the Bchor, I have to answer. It was the emotion of facing Yaakov, but it wasn't this, he didn't see the justice. You don't find anywhere that he saw more justice than the other Achim did. You understand what I mean? So now the emotion came out. But it was just an emotional reaction. Yaakov couldn't trust the person. Yaakov was too intelligent to trust the person that's under a serious emotion. Even if the emotion sounds like it's on your side. A person who wouldn't know any better would think, wonderful, he has a powerful emotion for me. That's very good. But a person who's rational knows that that's just as dangerous as a person who's against you. Why? Because the man, first of all, his intellect is under the power of an emotion. The situation comes up, he's not even going to handle it rationally. He's completely under the emotion. You see? His whole mental frame is completely distorted. His frame of mind is distorted. A person like that, you can't even send on a mission. Because a person like that could do worse things than a person who isn't emotionally involved. That's why they say many times, the best doctor is really not the doctor that has the emotion to save the patient, but the doctor who just enjoys what he's doing and inherently wants to do that which is right because he enjoys the perfection of his operation. A doctor that's emotionally involved can do dangerous things because his mind is emotionally involved for even though he wants to save your life. But the point is, when different possibilities come up, he's not going to see them objectively anymore. See? Now try to make certain maneuvers at certain times because of that emotion. Any emotion will interfere. But make sure your doctor doesn't like you. If he likes it too much, bad. So that's why the best doctor... I would say like this. The best doctor is an unhumane doctor. Not inhumane, but unhumane. But humane is dangerous. Humane or inhumane is bad. Unhumane, that's the one. That's the best one. Okay. Now, they're hard to find, though. You're usually the one with the other. Okay. So, now, the point is like this. So therefore, that's why Reuven was rejected. See? But what did Yehuda say? Let's take a look at what Yehuda said. By the way, you know, the Gemara says, there's a medrash over here that says that Reb Tarfon had a habit. Reb Tarfon had an interesting habit. Whenever a person would say something good to him, he'd say, Kafta v'ferach. And whenever a person would say something which was nonsensical, he would say, Lo yered b'ni imachem. What's up, Shat? That's from this parasha. Whenever a person said something that was rational, so they say kafta v'ferach. See, kafta v'ferach means on the menorah they had the design
and the
flower. It's like beauty, total beautification, total perfection. There's a little round thing, and then they had the flower coming out from the bottom So the thing is like this. So when a person says something rational, they say kafta v'ferach. But when they said something irrational, they said lo yered b'ni imachem. Why? What did he mean? He meant that's Reuven again. That's Reuven. Just the emotional reaction to the situation. Emotional reaction to the situation, lo yered b'ni imachem.
Very good.
What was Yehuda's rationality? Yehuda didn't say any preposterous statements. Yehuda just said one thing. He said v'chotasi l'cho kol ayonim. What does it mean? It meant to say like this, that I recognize there's no guarantee I can give you. Elam Haba wasn't given as a guarantee. He just mentioned like this. He said, I fully recognize what justice dictates, namely my obligation to you to make sure that Binyamin's returned. You understand? How deep do I recognize it? I recognize it insofar as my Elam Haba is concerned. It's not just a matter of doing politics over here, something which is not serious. This is a matter, it's for my own personal good. My own Olam Haba is at stake over here. In other words, he recognizes the seriousness. He recognizes it's not just a guarantee. I promise you I'll do this. You do this to me, I'll do this. It's crazy. That's just emotion. He said, the only thing I could tell you is that I recognize the seriousness of the justice over here. And I know that it's my own Olam Haba that's at stake. That's rationality. When a person like that, that's a person you can trust. See?
In other words, Olam Haba
what Olam Haba means is that if I fail to do this justice, then I am losing out. And you see that it meant Elam Haba to him? How do you see it meant Elam Haba to Yehuda? That's right. What could be more Elam Haba than the ability to learn Torah? Right? Learn Torah. And what did he do? He forfeited it. Why? Because the moment that he saw that Binyamin was going to be an Eved, he says, Va'ato, Yeshiv no avdecho tachas anar, Eved ladeini, v'anar yalem echov. What does that mean? That meant total slavery for Yehuda. Total servitude. Could a person sit and learn and continue to gain the Elam Haba, became Elam Haba with that? Impossible. But he recognized that the loss of justice would cause a greater loss in Elam Haba than the loss of the of Terah. You see? And that's why he stepped forth and he did it. Understand? So he backed his words up. It wasn't just simply a matter of he wasn't just saying words. He actually backed it up. Then Yaakov said like this. Once Yaakov saw that rationally there was no flaw in their procedure, right? Rationally there was no flaw in their procedure. And he had the guarantee of perfection because he saw that Yehuda was in charge and Yehuda was the one that was totally rational and there was no emotion of sinner involved. Then he said, Im Kain, if that's the case, now Im Kain Eifo Zosasu. You see, what happened was like this. The difference between what happens in Kain Eifo Zosasu is like this. Yaakov Avinu attached himself to two realities. The first reality was the reality of the Achim. The reality of the Achim. The first step was not to go into the reality at all. That was the first step. We spoke about that. Second step was the reality of the Achim. You're sending them on a mission. Let's see what their reality is. How do they stand? Now, in Kain Eifo Zosasu was when Yaakov Avinu's mind turned to that last bit of reality that had to be taken care of. What was it? The reality of the situation itself. That was taken care of last. See? A fool would act in the exact opposite way. First thing you worry about is the situation. See? What's happening here? What's happening? It's Ryan. It's this, that. Yaakov wasn't even interested. Wasn't even curious. Didn't interest him. Rationality dictates now withdrawal. Wait for reality. That's all. Second, rationality dictates deal with the people, the reality of the people. Who are you dealing with over there? That's the next step we have to analyze. Mm-hmm. And once that's straightened out, now we can start dealing with the situation of Yosef. There's a leader. Now let's deal with the situation you're facing in Mitzrayim. Now you're up for charges. Let's deal with that situation. Before that, we can't even discuss it. Then Yaakov told him what to do. What did he tell him to do? In Kain Eifo Zosasu. Kechu Mizimra Saras Bechlechem. Right? Varid Leish Mincha. Matzor Matvash. Politics. You see? Why this politics? Why? Because there were two possibilities. One possibility was that there was the total frame. Right? They're framed. And there's something very serious going on here. If that's the case, you understand very well that Mincha's not going to do anything. Mincha's not going to help. It's too late already. Right? But there is another possibility. The other possibility is you're dealing with a capricious leader. Capricious leader, he's worried. He has his own emotional conflicts. He's concerned, worried about Mitzrayim, this, that, his own difficulties. So therefore, he's acting capriciously. So therefore, you have to act back in a way to smooth him over. Smooth over his emotions. In other words, he has his own emotions. He's a leader, he's worried, he's in charge, he has difficulty, he has to watch out for Mitzrayim, he's responsible to Paray, he sees something that looks funny to him, who knows why? It's not a rational, if he rationally is proven that you're really miraglin, nothing's going to help. I mean, if a guy is convicted as a spy, you don't have any presence he brings, it's ridiculous. But if it's just an emotional thing, who knows what it is? Capricious, he didn't like the way they looked, he didn't like the way they spoke, they didn't speak the right way, they weren't nice, certain things that didn't hit it off right with him. So therefore, that you could change. That's mincha. Politics could change it. Smooth them over. Smooth them over, then you'll be able to change your situation. That was Yaakov. What? Test me. They say the price went up. Now, that's what they say. Otherwise, you say your shot. You say shot that they wanted to pay him off. But, yeah. What about the money? But what about the money that was given back? So he says, Ulai Mishgehu. What does Ulai Mishgehu mean? Right. There's one point we left out of here. You see, really, the truth of the matter is that after Yehuda convinced Yaakov about the... At what point did Yaakov turn his mind to the reality of the situation? Where would you say? Which pasuk? Which pasuk? Yes? Which pasuk? You know what you say, right?
No, when he wasn't given the...
Yud. Pasuk Yud. Pasuk Yud. Because what's pasuk Yud doing here? Ki lulei hismamonu ki atah shavu zef amoyim. If it wouldn't have been, it would have been back twice. What does that mean? Ki lulei hismamonu. If it wouldn't have waited, it would have been back two times already. What kind of statement is that? What kind of statement is that? What's the answer? The answer is once he saw the Yehuda was rational, now he wanted to know from Yehuda. He wanted to know from Yehuda, what do you think about the situation? What's your opinion about the situation? So he said, my opinion is that we would have been back twice already.
Oh, you would have seen him back already.
Yeah, that's right. That's what he said. In other words, he told him that it's rational to go. There's no question about we could do it. Then he said, okay. In Cain, Eifa, Zay, so.
Funny.
What?
That's
funny. Yeah, so the tshuva. So he's rational. So the tshuva. Now I want to ask you, what do you think of it? He said, I think we'd be back twice. Then we can go. Now we can go ahead.
Yeah.
Now he said, ulai mishgahu. Maybe it's a mistake. And if it's a mistake, so then you'll be able to work right. Even though there's another possibility, but you have no choice now. You have to operate. Now you must operate with the possibility that it's a... You must operate under the possibility that it was a mishgah. Otherwise, you can't move. See? Otherwise, when here we stay, we stop. Over there, it's a good chance of the mishgah. So what do you have to do? You have to go down to Mitzrayim. But you notice he never deluded himself. Never deluded himself. No possibility. That's why he said... And the last thing, of course, was the hashgacha. The keol shaka, yitin lechem racham lefnei ish. Yeshilach lechem asachicham acher vez binyamin. Right? That was the last thing, was tefillah. That was the last thing that he did. He worked out the situation every step rationally, and then he was mispal. Because in the end he knew that no matter what man does in this world, he always must be mispal to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That was the last step. Vani kasher shecholti shecholti. What does that mean? Vani kasher shecholti shecholti. What does that mean? What does it mean? Let me see if you could paraphrase the statement. What does it mean? Vani kasher shecholti shecholti. Kasher shecholti shecholti means one thing. It means that I have to accept. It means two things actually. But the first basic thing it means, I must accept the reality now. That's it. See? Before he said, "I see shikaltem yasef v'nei v'shim v'nei v'binyamin tikahu." That was because he wasn't forced yet to accept the situation, because reality still could save him. You see? So he's operating under different premises in the first case. But now he says, now there's no more choice. So therefore, I have to do this action, and he can't delude himself into thinking he's going to be successful. He doesn't know. He says, who knows? Maybe there's a chance it's all over. But I must accept the rationality. That's what it means. I'm already... In other words, I must accept the rationality. But when he says he must accept the rationality, he said it in a specific form. Kasher shecholti shecholti. What does it mean? It means like this. It means the truth of the matter is the only thing that's going to happen to me now, the only thing left for reality to happen that would be bad is in a quantitative way, not in a qualitative way. You see? Why? Because qualitatively when I lost Yosef, that was already shecholti. See? Kasher avadati avadati. In other words, it means like this. That the quality already is there, the quality of the pain. Now it's just a question of losing Binyamin. Binyamin is not a new quality. Binyamin is just a quantitative increase of my tzar. But he says, now I must accept that reality. I must accept the reality of the quantitative increase. You see? Why was Binyamin only a quantitative increase? Because I told you before. Because Binyamin really was a copy of Yosef. But there was one difference. You see, when Yosef interviewed Binyamin, so he told him, he said... He said, Yesh lecha isha. He said, Yesh lecha achi yestem. So he met privately with Binyamin. So Shalom, he asked him, said, Yesh lecha ach? Ne'em? Amalai ach hoyali. Veni dechem, I don't know where he is. Yesh lecha bonim? You have any children? Amalai yesh li yasara. Amalai amashimam, what's their names? So he told him their names. He said, what kind of names are these? So he said, they're all names because of my brother and because of the tzaras that happened to him. So he goes through each case. Bolash Nivla Bein Umais, who was lost among the nations. Becher Shoya Bechor Le'imi, he was a Bechor. Ashbel Sheshvoy Kael, God captured him. Gerosh Nisgaya Bachsanya, he lived as a vagrant. Venamon Shoyanoim B'Yesha, very sweet. Echi Vareish, Ochi Hoya Vareishi Hoya, my brother was my leader. Mupin Mipi Ovi Lomar, he learned that from my father. Because Yosef was the only one that learned the type of his father. V'chupim shalarochu pasmi noloris chupasai. V'orad shiyar levein umais. What's the pshat? What does pshat mean all these names? What's the name? What do all these names mean? See, what is a child? A child really is an extension of the individual. And it showed one thing, that Binyamin had a total identification with Yosef. See, total identification. But he identified with Yosef not just an irrational identification, but it was an identification based upon rationality. Why? Because Yosef was really his guide. Yosef was his leader. Yosef was his teacher. It was his brother, but it was his teacher. So that's why every one of the children he named, because of the quality, two things. You see two things in the names. One was the quality of the brother of Yosef, and the other thing was what happened to him. Why? It showed one thing. It showed that he never stopped. He never stopped missing him. Why didn't he stop missing him? Because he recognized those qualities that were so necessary for his life. You see? That's a shot. He recognized the qualities that were necessary for him to live the correct life. So the one that really made the breakthroughs in life was really Yosef. But Binyamin was able to follow everything that he had. See? So that's what Kasher Shecholti Shecholti. Really, Binyamin was a copy of Yosef. You see? But he needed Yosef, because Yosef showed him the way. So Yosef was the original one, but he was the one that recognized the truth. He was the only one. The other brothers seemed to deny it, because they didn't want to accept the leadership, because leadership was a blow to their ego. But he was the only one that really saw exactly the importance of having somebody like Yosef, how every step he could derive from him. He wouldn't be able to do it himself, so every step they would learn from him. So that's why he named every one of his sons for the greatness of his brother and for the loss, because he never got over the loss. See? That's true. That's right. Very young teenager. So that's why he says Kasher Shecholti Shecholti. It meant that the difference is only a quantitative one. But that quantitative reality, Yaakov said, now I must accept. I'm forced. I have no choice. I have to accept that quantitative reality now. That's the truth. Okay. Just one additional point that we didn't mention. It's really it should be implicit. But the point is like this. That when he accepted Yehuda, so then he said that we would have been back two times already, right? So in other words, so he was accepting Yehuda's statement. See, that was because now he was forced to go by what they had to say. Yeah. You understand what I mean? Now he was forced to go. Okay, now I'm forced to go by what they say. Before, he's not forced to even listen to them. Because reality dictates, universal principle dictates they're guilty. Whatever they say is lies. Don't accept it. Oh, but now the reality forced him into the situation, so now he has to go by what they said. So he said, okay, what do you have to say about it?